now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, this is The Ruck. It feels, well, quiet in here today, and that's because there's no Jonesy in our company. Apparently, he is off starting a new co-investment with Nigel Ray this afternoon. That was a joke for anyone who listened last week, and that will be the end of it. I'm Owen Slott. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello. How are you, Owen?
Yeah, great. I was at Quinn's yesterday, which was cold and slightly unsatisfactory, but I think you've seen slightly better rugby over the weekend.
Well, there's some brilliant games of Premiership rugby. It feels a bit odd that they're wedged in between four rounds of European rugby.
So yeah, it's a
sort of odd child out, really, isn't it? Anyway, I managed to get up to the East Midlands Derby, which is always a fantastic fixture. Unfortunately, this year, depending on which side of the line or the boundary line you sit on, it was a little bit one-sided. But wonderful Northampton, which we'll get onto in a minute, and woeful Leicester, which we'll also get onto in a minute. And then I came and joined you at Quinn's, and it was a sort of a seesaw fixture, wasn't it? One way, then the other. And I guess when the music stopped, Quinn's were ahead.
The best thing about the Quinn's Gloucester fixture for me was we've discovered what is Ollie Thorley's favourite Christmas carol.
And?
I don't want to ruin the suspense because we might get listeners going right to the end of the podcast for that one.
He was very exciting, wasn't he? Two tries and probably one of the best players on the field.
I think he looks brilliant at the moment. And his appetite for work as well. He doesn't stick on one wing for a minute.
No, and I think they've got some very good wingers there.
Great, and sitting quietly in the corner is the new acclaimed boffin of rugby, Alex Lowe.
Oh, God, we're not doing that again.
It's stuck now, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you were a regular during the World Cup, you'll know that Alex knows everything. We've got a quiz for Alex later. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Can we just clarify? Is Stephen Jones getting some medical attention this week?
Because he's
got some sort of problem with his mind and brain. Because you know, he seems to think that he's read the report, which is obviously super confidential, and clearly keeps regurgitating the same old nonsense week in, week out. So
he's just off with Nigel, as we said. Yeah. He's editing it for the umpteenth time. Now, Alex, we will go to a quiz because everyone loves the quiz.
Okay.
But just for the moment, knowing everything, you probably know who's going to be on Eddie Jones's new coaching staff.
I'm not sure even Eddie knows that. I'm not sure. I don't think even Eddie can.
Can I just be clear, Alex? He obviously, Steve Borthwick has made his intentions clear that he wants to leave, but he cannot leave until they find a replacement.
That's my understanding of it.
Because Leicester, can't really do with his services quick enough. If I'm perfectly honest,
absolutely. Leicester desperately need him. But Steve Borthwick is on the staff at the RFU now. He's not even on a contract. And I think England and Eddie Jones knows that Borthwick needs to move on and wants to move on, but he's not going to release him until he knows who he can bring in his slate. And the issue when you look around the world is or even certainly around England, who are the available and suitable forwards coaches and attack coach? Now he's lost Scott Wise-Mantle too.
Mm. Mark Johnson's mobile number, I've got that one. If Eddie Jones needs that,
and a scrum coach,
that'd be quite good, wouldn't it?
Assuming that he keeps the same kind of style of backroom team, and Eddie ran the attack for the first couple of years, and then Rory T came in briefly, and then
Will Greenwood would be a good attack coach as well, actually.
Well, I mean, you were at Northampton. Sam Vestey's done...
He used to run our attack for the best part of about 6 years. So I don't really understand why someone like that wouldn't be sounded out for...
He has been in, hasn't he?
He coaches Maidenhead and he likes to sort of stay as Eddie Jones's mate. But yeah, I mean,
I thought 2 or 3 years ago that Will was paving the way for a move into coaching. I mean,
he did the Barbarians.
He coaches Maidenhead, doesn't he?
I mean, he would be, without having been involved in rugby, he'd be perfectly capable of picking that up quite quickly because, you know, he's still coaching obviously at Maidenhead. He's very much understands the England setup because he's been in there quite a few times. And if I was in that position, I'd certainly consider him as an option because, no disrespect to some of the young, up and coming England coaches, but, you know, they don't have the IP that he has as a player and in terms of what he did. So why not?
So that's interesting. So in the last week, Wales have announced Warburton as coming in as a ruck coach or
consultant.
And Martin Williams going in as the team manager.
Yeah.
And Lawrence, you must be almost bored of asking this question, but it just seems you look at 2003 and you always go, well, surely more of them should have, I don't know if you were encouraged or not encouraged, but as you say, intellectual property, you lot have got
it. Yeah, and I agree. And look, Conor O'Shea's just been made back, he's just come back into the RFU setup as maybe a direct replacement for Nigel Melville, who's stepping down. And you always wonder whether there's never really been conversations amongst that group in 03 as to, look, is there a way that we can get you into, you know, back into rugby, into that pathway, you know, whether it be coaching at lower level, just so we can have this succession plan. People in the RFU might argue you need to make yourself available, but I think it's a two-way conversation.
I would say so. And you just won a World Cup, you might be helpful to us.
I think it would be a shame if all that IP was left, you know, because... It's fairly powerful. It's quite strong. And you see these other teams, you know, doing it. Nigel Williams, as you say, Martin Williams, beg your pardon. But I do think that clearly, if you appoint a head coach like Eddie Jones, it's his remit as to who he decides then to bring in. And any successful coaching team is always around the alchemy of getting the right people involved. And you can call them head of breakdown or defence or whatever you want to call them. It's that kind of mixture of roles, really, that counts.
I suppose he has gone some way down that road, Eddie. I mean, he brought George Smith in as a breakdown consultant when George Smith was at Wasps. He's got Richard Hill as his team manager.
Mm.
He's got Johnny working with the kickers. I mean, he's gone some way down that down that road.
And he's got John Mitchell, who's a sort of a coach from the bridges, though, you know, those eras very much. He's coached in England, etc. So,
were you serious? You mentioned Jono. Do you think Jono could put a tracksuit on? I mean, he's not going to be the head coach, but running the forwards or something. I mean, would he just slip into that easy?
I don't think he would slip into it, but I think that there's a role that Jono can play within a team, either as a selector or a sort of a sounding board. But he's been burnt so badly by the RFU. Whether he would, you know, come back at their request is another matter. But you know, for someone that I know very well and understand his brain in terms of what his input into rugby, it seems a shame that England have invested 8 years of experience into him, paid him for 8 years and made him the England coach, and then that person then just walks away from the game. Just seems very odd, doesn't it?
But a lot of what the RFU do, he's very fast on a bike.
Doesn't have logic, you know. But I think, so anyway, listen, I think he could have a role to play, Will Greenwood. There's lots of others, as you say, but...
Lawrence, how different? So we're talking about the stars of 2003 who have been around the game but aren't coaching on a day-to-day basis. Certainly with Martin since he left. Will is coaching
Maidenhead,
kind of grassroots level, but not elite level. There's often a debate as to whether the international game is so different from the club game that what you do in the Premiership doesn't necessarily prepare you for Test rugby. Is that sort of what we're talking about here? That actually there are people who might be better suited to help in England than would work in the Premiership. I mean, the successful Premiership coaches at the moment, like an Alex Anderson or a Ali Hefa, or, you know, I'm talking below DOR level.
Yeah.
People would look at them as having made a big difference at club level. But is Test rugby different and it requires different?
No, I don't think so. I mean, yes, it is different and it does require a few little tweaks and changes, but not wholesale changes. And I mean, Alex Anderson, again, is another one that I know Eddie Jones is has often gone to Saracens, you know, either for players or something else, because he, you know, it's his go-to club. But I'm not sure Saracens would let Alex Arnesen go, but he would be a very popular choice because he already runs the core of the team anyway.
Yeah.
In terms of, and he understands the dynamics between those players. But you're right, you know, look, there's going to be a lot of new coaches for the Six Nations across all the countries.
As previously mentioned, we are missing Jonesy, and we're feeling sad about that. But he did have one very characteristic almighty rant in the Sunday Times yesterday, which I think was worth having a conversation about. I mean, he had a big blast at Eddie Jones's book. He said Eddie's making his observations about the landscape of English rugby and how it's still very classist, and how that was a problem. Blending people from different backgrounds together. What do you two think of that? And I know, Lawrence, you got a particular view on, there was another element of the book that didn't sort of sit well with you.
Well, I mean, listen, first and foremost, I need to just put on the record that I'm a fan of Eddie Jones. I'm not suggesting that, you know, that I'm a critic of his. I think he's done a wonderful job with the England rugby team. He was 80 minutes away from replicating what we managed to do in 2003. And he delivered a masterclass in terms of the performances right up to the final. So even though we lost the final, it was a very satisfactory World Cup.
Yeah.
So that aside, the subject of writing books is one that I know well because I released my own book, you know, 2 weeks after I'd retired from international rugby and was somewhat critical, or, you know, books only sell serialisations in newspapers if there's something interesting to discuss. If there's nothing interesting to discuss, the newspapers, let's be honest, are not interested.
Who did you kill in your book then?
Just the whole setup of the 2007 World Cup and the,
all right,
the kind of, you know, from tragedy to almost triumph was bizarre. But it's always going to create a little bit of sensitivity around the squad. And we actually discussed it as a group in 2003 and said, you know, is it acceptable that we all have newspaper columns? Is it acceptable that we all write, you know, books about each other? And then they get published in the newspaper. And I think what we eventually agreed, and this included the coaches as well,
yeah,
is that as long as you didn't say things that were derogatory, defamatory about each other, or you perhaps didn't, you know, share closely guarded secrets. Probably similar to the SAS. You know, they've had a big fallout, haven't they, when ex-servicemen leave the SAS and then suddenly tell all about, you know, some of the most sort of sensitive information. We ended up coming up with a sort of a structure whereby, you know, we agreed what was acceptable and what wasn't. And then we went out to, you know, that. And I think the idea that if I was going to write something about my teammates, that I would let them read it prior to it going into the newspaper, I think was okay with me. Because if you're not prepared to say it to their face, then that's fine. So I just felt with the book that Eddie wrote, I get he wants to sell a book, or he's decided to sell a book. It just felt like it was very close to the end of the Rugby World Cup final to be serialised in the newspapers and sort of quite critical of the Premiership, quite critical of individual players and the style and structure of rugby in this country. Now, I appreciate if he didn't say that, no one would be interested, really, but it just didn't feel right. And I just wondered who at the RFU was overseeing that, you know, and allowing permission for that book to be written, because this is not a coach who's finished his international career with England. He's still got two more years left on his contract.
I think the book would have been better if it had come out at the end of it, because I think his opinions would probably have been sharper, because I think he pulled some punches for the reason that you're saying, because he's still got to work with them. But at the same time, he had to throw a few and they don't go down so well. The players weren't too happy about it.
These are players that he's got to continue to coach. And therefore, you know, it does sort of ever so slightly change the relationship. Now, I like Eddie Jones. When you interview him or you speak to him or you hear him speaking, he's very direct. Can be loose a little bit sometimes, but that's absolutely fine. You know, we can all talk. I can talk for Britain as well. But it's just the way I just didn't feel that there was quite the level of control over that particular publication. And I just wonder whether Bill Sweeney, you know, needs to get a grip of their modus operandi and just say, you know, this is how, you know, there should be a social media policy, which I'm sure there is, but it should be the same for the players as it is for the coaches. There should be a policy on books.
There were separate rules, different rules.
To your question on who was overseeing it, is I'm pretty sure nobody.
Yeah.
Because nobody, Eddie does what he wants at the RFU. I mean, he was striking advertising deals in Japan that the RFU knew nothing about. He was plugging products over the last few years that the RFU knew nothing about. He was doing jobs in Japan that the RFU knew nothing about. He's the most powerful person there. And I do think it was a bit rich that to have one rule for the players and one rule for him. That's just a recipe for trouble, I think. And the players who often have had newspaper columns in the past are now not allowed to have newspaper columns, which is what we're referring to.
And I think what we're saying is that I go back to this, I'm not being critical of him per se, but I mean, if you don't have your wings clipped, you're just going to crack on, aren't you, really? And someone should be saying, look, I don't think it's a good idea that, you know, we're paying you a lot of money to be the England coach. You don't need to do this, or possibly, you know, would you, you know, we've got all this going on. So I just think that it's something that the incoming CEO, Bill Sweeney, who's now in post, you know, if he's going to renew Eddie Jones's contract for another 2 years, so he's going to go for another World Cup, which it looks more than likely he will. I mean, Alex, our guru, will tell us more on that very shortly. But
what day is he going to sign it next week?
I think he already has.
But he needs to put a bit of a framework and a structure around it. And if that needs input from the senior players, then go and get it. Because if I was consulting, you know, if you were a senior player in his squad, you'd say, well, if you're going to do that, then we should be able to write newspaper columns as well.
Well, they've got a right to feel dissatisfied, and I know that some of them do, but I also think that we're at the stage where what they'll earn from a newspaper column compared to their contracts these days, it doesn't really make much of a difference. I actually don't know why they would bother unless they're actually interested in getting into the media when they leave.
Also, there's a brand of English rugby that needs to be protected somewhat. There's a brand of Premiership rugby that needs to be protected. There's enough people outside of England that want to have a pop at England rugby and the Premiership rugby brand. They don't need people on the inside having a pop at it as well. If I was in charge of that brand at the RFU, I'd be pretty disappointed, is all I'm saying.
Right, we need to talk about what we saw at the weekend. Yeah. Can we try and put it into context a little bit? Can you see who's a likely winner of the Premiership at the end of this season? Because we're going to have a new winner. Saracens ain't going to win this thing. I think we can confidently say that. I think there are two teams that are sort of pushing out in front a little bit in terms of style and the way they're playing and their confidence, but there's so much to happen and teams can lose their way during the Six Nations when they lose lots of their international players. Thoughts on that, Alex?
Well, one of those teams, I assume you mean, is Northampton, and I thought what was so impressive about them against a poor Leicester team is that they would have had some notice that they may have been missing three key players but Dan Biggar, Owen Franks and Courtney Laws pulled out of that team a couple of hours before kickoff. Those are three huge players for them, two of whom will be missing in the Six Nations, as you just referred to. And yet, James Grayson steps up and, you know, plays to the manor born, just outstanding. And they didn't miss a beat. And they've got some young players coming through there, Rory Hutchison, another one who should have gone to the World Cup, who are playing this attractive but also really effective and sort of cutting-edge brand of rugby under Chris Boyd and Sam Vesti, their attack coach. There aren't many teams, I don't think, who could lose those three players shortly before kickoff and still produce as emphatic a performance as they did, particularly in the heated environment of an East Midlands derby, where, and you know, this wasn't the kind of ding dong battle that we love to watch down the years with Tom Wood and Tom Youngs going at it and those sort of things, but this was Leicester who should be fighting and hurting, and it should have been tough. And I just thought Northampton were imperious. I thought James Grayson is rapidly becoming a really, really impressive fly half.
Yeah, I mean, Northampton are a breath of fresh air this season. I think for anyone who saw their progress last year under Chris Boyd, it's got similarities between Warren Gatland, who took over Wasps many years ago in 2001, and we finished seventh in the Premiership that year. But he came in at the back end of the season and he got a good look at the squad. And then he made some changes for the following year, and we ended up winning the title the next year. And Chris Boyd has come in; he's really assessed the Northampton squad and recognised that he needs to make some fundamental changes. And one of those is not to be over reliant on the international players, which, you know, clearly the weekend demonstrated that, but also the likes of, you know, some of the players that were previously there. He seems to have freed them up. You know, he comes with a huge amount of experience. He's won two Super Rugby titles. He's created this freedom. They don't have possession for very long. In fact, they're the team that hold the ball for the least amount of time, and they make quite a lot of mistakes. So, but they're allowed to do that. You know, they're given that ability to go out and play, and I think that's been, you know, nothing short of giving them that confidence. And you know, interestingly, they made the playoffs last year. but they only won 6 out of 11 home games. So they're creating a much more of a fortress at Franklin's Gardens, because it always used to be quite a difficult place to play. And I think, you know, they will at least make the playoffs, if not better. There's still a few question marks in their forward pack. What he's done is he's created a style of rugby that suits the players they've got. They used to try and take people on up the middle with these big forward runners. They haven't got that power in their team. So what he has looked at is he's looked at their outside backs and the likes of Collins, Naivoro, and all these wonderful players. And then he's brought in Matt Proctor from the All Blacks, one cap for the All Blacks, and brought him over. They play rugby by beating people on the edge and getting the ball to the wide open spaces. And it's, you know, listen, it's a breath of fresh air. There'll be tougher times ahead, but, you know, so far they are the team. And then the other team I would just highlight is Bristol. I think for me, the two revelations this season for fans have been Bristol and Northampton, because they're occupying, you know, two of the top four spots. And obviously with Saracens, temporary demise down the bottom end of the table. Obviously, we mustn't discount Exeter Chiefs.
Exeter would still be your favourites.
Exeter, without doubt, the favourites, because they've been there for the last few seasons. Yeah, yeah. They've got the trophy. They've worn the T-shirt.
Yeah, they know what.
And actually, since their European campaign has got underway, you know, they look mightily impressive in the last few weeks, for sure.
Your point about Northampton making mistakes just reminded me of a conversation that I had with Tom Wood towards the end of last season. In fact, I think it was semi-final week, where we were talking about mistakes and how there's a freedom in training to push the envelope, and mistakes are almost encouraged because it allows the players to free up their thinking, but also push themselves to the limit of, so they know what, you know, where their skill set takes them. And we were talking about an NFL quarterback who in the off season was being picked off for interceptions regularly in their training camp, but the reason was he was being encouraged to try the hardest throws he could, so he knew where the limits were. And Tom Wood was saying that's one of the big things that Chris Boyd had brought in. I think the other point you made about him assessing his squad is spot on, because, you know, Jim Allen did a lot of good things at that club, but by the end it felt like his thinking was just clouded by the pressure of trying to force results. Lewis Ludlam is the classic example. Malander just never picked him. He couldn't bring himself to take the risk of picking the promising youngster who might make a mistake or two because he's raw. He felt he had to stick with the old guard, and I understand that pressure. But Chris Boyd came in with a fresh perspective on the squad and saw the talent, and with a new environment and a sense of confidence, which has imbued the way they play, and that sense of freedom and an encouragement to go for it.
Yeah.
Someone like Lewis Ludlam has
The other thing they've got is they've got an attacking shape which they work on every single week, and that's something that I remember from my own days. You need to have a shape and a structure, a pattern, if you like, in attack that you go back to. Eddie Jones talked about attack takes a really long time to coach, and it does, but it takes a lot longer if you spend hours and hours on your set piece. Yeah. And I think that, you know, you look at Northampton's attacking structure and it looks really organised, a bit like Wales, a bit like some of these other teams. They know exactly where the ball's going. And they know who's going to source the rucks, who's actually involved, and by line. And then it doesn't matter if you lose 260 caps an hour before kickoff. The three players coming in have got, you know, they may not have that international experience, but they know exactly the structure and shape of the team in attack. And I dare say, if I turned up at Saints training, I reckon they spend more time on their attacking shape and their pattern than they do anything else. They've also got players that you seem to, you know, Kiwi coaches are very good at raising the lowest common denominator. You know, your superstars will always perform well, hopefully, and if they don't, you drop them. He's got that ability to get the best out of players who maybe have been delivering 5 or 6 out of 10, and then suddenly you raise that to 9 or 10 out of 10. Naivoro is a classic example of that. You know, he was playing okay last season, moments of brilliance. I mean, his individual stats were more than the entire Leicester team put together. When he said to me before kickoff, Chris Boyd, he said, "I'm a bit concerned. We just lost 260 caps out the team." He said, "We're going to have to get 5 or 10% more out of everyone today." And my word, did he get that?
I thought Bristol, I mean, they played some great rugby so far this season. They looked to me yesterday to be the classic team at the start of a journey. Like they come off. Was it 36-0 against Brive the week before? Buoyant, top of the table. And then they just misfired in certain areas. And the halfbacks weren't weren't consistent enough, and they looked like a team with promise. Well, they looked like the team that they are, a club that's building something. And obviously, the distraction of Rudradra coming in and the excitement that generated in the week, and all the talk of this 5-year project, they played to me yesterday like where they are quite early in that project. But there are Harry Thacker was just sensational again, on the floor and with the ball in hand, and I just wish he was slightly bigger because I'm not sure whether you'll look at him. But what a player he is.
So listen, if it's not going to be London Irish and if it's not going to be Worcester, then who actually is going to go down? Because we all seem to be saying, oh, Saracens are definitely going to catch up. But if those teams at the bottom, Leicester, Wasp and Bath, the teams at the bottom of the table, they've all got enough quality in them to win a number of games. If they carry on winning a few games, that none of them are the sort of like the sick man of Europe who have got a weakened squad or anything. If they get it together, then the bottom end of the Premiership is going to be higher than it's ever been before. Yeah. So might it actually be hard for Saracens to catch up? Or do you think one of those will actually just end up tripping themselves up and never getting it together?
Your point about winning is the only team that's winning down the bottom is Saracens at the moment. And looking at their squad and the teams that they put out, I think it's fair to say they're probably going to continue to win their fair share of games. Personally, and I say this with no great pleasure, Wasser need to pick up some wins. In fairness to them, they've had a tough fixture list. They lost their first game of the season to London Irish, which was critical, at home. But since then, they've been away to Gloucester, away to Sale, and away to Exeter. And I'm not sure that even at their best, those were games that they were probably likely to win. So they've had a slightly tough start. But they are very much locked in a battle with the likes of Leicester. But I think even after 5 games, you've got to somehow put the word relegation out of your head and just say, look, let's look at the next 5 fixtures. And where, can we pick up, as you say, 2 or 3 wins? And then all of a sudden, it does start to become a lot more interesting. But I'd say the clubs the fans that need to start worrying and batten down the hatches now, even after 5 games, Leicester for sure.
I think Wasps, Leicester for sure.
And and Bath, really, because I'm not sure Bath are out of it, even though they picked up a couple of wins.
Well, the problems for Leicester and Bath is that they might start building a bit of momentum, but as soon as you get into the Six Nations, Leicester in particular, you take away Ben Youngs possibly, George Ford definitely, Manu, Johnny May, then that's the cavalry gone, isn't it? And then where are they going to get their wins? Bath also have a fairly strong England contingent, and Wasps less so. So Wasps have a better chance in that phase.
Well, I think Leicester have got some decisions to make, haven't they? Because I felt for Jordan Murphy after the game. He just looked as desperate and distraught and as low as I've ever seen him in a post-match interview, quite clearly hurting from that. But, it's very hard to put up any reason why they were so bad, other than they just didn't really understand what they were doing. And he chose, rightly or wrongly, in this case it appeared wrongly, to bring back 6 England players straight into their structure. And unfortunately, there remains the problem. You had a player like Manu Tuilagi who spent the whole day waiting for something to happen as opposed to going out and making it happen.
Yeah.
And when you bring international quality players back into a system and a structure that's not as sound as it could be, you kind of see, you can't just expect them to sort of, be the magicians to turn it around. And, if you flip that on its head and look at Saracens, they brought back 6 or 7 international players and they immediately were able to click into gear and they all perform magnificently well. And there, I think, lies the problem with Leicester. It's not the international players that are the issue. It's what gets left behind. And they really need to work hard on recreating that identity, that shape, that structure, so that whoever comes in and out the team is able to fit in a bit more seamlessly than they are.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
This is the Alex Lowe Knows Everything segment of the podcast. Quick question answer. Alex, Wales said goodbye to Warren Gatland at the weekend. He's gotten on his plane and gone back to New Zealand. How did they honour him?
Well, they honoured him by naming a gate after him. Although they did want this to be his last game in charge of Wales, and he actually said no, it should be Wayne Pivac's first game. So maybe that was also an intended honour which he turned down. But yeah, sorry, anyway, a gate.
Yeah, not a statue. Prime ministers get airports named
gate.
After them.
I thought it was slightly.
I thought gate was a bit disappointing. Lawrence, have you got any gates named
better,
after you?
Wouldn't it?
Gatland's gate.
is that supposed to be a play on words?
What?
Well, gate. I don't know. Gats. Go. No, right.
Well, he delivered three. Three Grand Slams, and you know he's been instrumental really in Wales's rugby history. And I think certainly, if you ask the fans, I'd have gone out to the fans and said, how do you think we should remember Warren Gatland? Because you know, they're
a stand more than a gate. I would have given him a stand or a statue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or an airport. Which gate was it?
Four. It was gate number four. Is that the one on the corner, I think, near the meter?
Yeah, your favourite gate.
Yeah.
Which club has taken over from Gloucester this season as the most South African team in the Premiership? We've already had that.
Sale.
Okay, but more to the point, how many South Africans started for them at the weekend?
It was like half the team, was it? Seven?
Yeah, brilliant. And how did that backfire?
Horribly, because they lost.
Because one of them got sent off.
Oh, one of them got sent off.
Well, Lawrence, you got one point.
How low can you go? Is that the name of the quiz?
Yeah. Israel Folau is claiming legal damages from Rugby Australia, as we know. He raised his claim last week from $10 million Aussie dollars to $14 million, which is roughly £7 million. What was his reason for raising
Because
his
somehow
claim?
He suddenly had this notion that anyone would make a fullback of the team captain. I mean, I've got no idea.
He said, you owe me more because I was going to be captain.
I mean, do you realise that?
Lawrence has got 2 points now, Alex.
Captain and in charge of our social media protocol, I think, would probably be the best way. But no, he'd be neither, and therefore, good luck to him.
That's a ludicrous idea, isn't it?
Good luck to him. I think that's his dad, isn't it, that must be pulling the strings in the background.
This is a real boffins question. Niall Annett.
This is Lawrence's end.
Niall Annett captained Worcester at the weekend. Why was that a significant fact?
Because he is the fifth, sixth.
Unbelievable.
Sixth different player to captain the club this season. Yeah.
You need to get out more, mate. You really do. You definitely need to get out more.
Sixth different captains, so they've got a strong leadership group, which may be why they're doing quite well.
Yeah, or they don't know who their best.
Okay, final question. Three of the four Welsh regions lost at the weekend. That's not so extraordinary. But was that really a surprise with so many of their best players on duty in the Wales Barbarian game?
No, I think they'd probably lost anyway, wouldn't they?
How can they have organised that game on the same weekend of a Pro 14 weekend?
Those regions accept it because the money...
Because they thought they were going to lose anyway.
Well, no, because the money they get divvied up from the gate receipts, etc., once the Barbarians have been paid, is sufficient, and Gatland's been paid, sufficiently good enough, really.
OK, well, final question. Is that ethically questionable?
Yes.
It's not great for the fans, is it? It's not great for if you're a fan of one of those regions, and I mean the fans understand it, but if you're a fan of one of those regions
and you're losing to Zebre and Cheetahs they lost to.
But also I get a bit miffed by the fact if you're a fan of an Irish province, for instance, and week after week you're turning up to games and you're seeing your academy play, really. But obviously for the European Cup you're seeing all your main stars back. Now maybe you've got to ask the fans whether they're acceptable, but you know that's basically what you get in the large chunks of the Pro 14, and that's the way it is.
the really, really exciting news last week, even more so than the row on the ruck, was the new man coming to Bristol Bears. So on Tuesday morning, Bristol announced that they had signed the Fijian superstar Semi Radradra. Or that, I've got the pronunciation wrong. All the D's are N's, aren't they? All the R's are N's. Ranrandra. All right, let's just move on from that part of part. It's astonishing signing. I started off a little debate in the Times. Who's the most exciting signing from outside to come into the Premiership? You chimed in with Rob Howley.
Let's just talk about that signing at the moment. The Bristol signing. I mean, it's an incredible coup for Bristol. He is serious box office. You know, he seemed a little bit disillusioned with his rugby union career, and all the sort of signals were that he was returning back to NRL in Australia, and then for them to announce that is amazing. And look, let's just say it's X Factor, it's box office, it's a brilliant signing. He can do things that very few rugby players can do, and to have him in the Premiership is a big coup.
Everyone wins.
Obviously, watching that. What everyone was then asking, you know, given what's happening with Saracens, is how can they afford him? Well, the first question is that the man who runs Bristol is probably got the deepest pockets of any of the owners. So if the salary cap was abolished, he'd probably be able to buy most of the best players in the world in the same way as Toulon did, and have them in there. I don't think that's...
He could actually buy the whole Premiership.
I don't think that's for one second what he plans to do. And I'm sure Pat Lamb has made it very clear as to how they've accommodated him, why they've gone after him as a player.
Can we just name him? Steve Lansdowne, the owner.
Yeah, Steve Lansdowne,
the
owner.
And say what fans of him as his we are. Yeah. And that we'd like to come to tea.
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe we can have the same information that Stephen Jones appears to have as well.
Lawrence said we let it lie, but it's more fun
well,
to bring
while,
it up.
While he's not here, let's definitely stick the knife in. There's exactly, nothing wrong with that. Exactly. But if you miss training, that's what happens.
Yeah, never turn back.
You don't get picked. But so are they retaining the services of Charles Piatow at fullback?
They intend to. So they're on the record.
So one will be a marquee player, and I'm assuming that will now be Radradra.
Yeah.
And the other one will be, you know, in the salary cap. But look, I mean, it's a brilliant signing, and you know, we're all excited about it, as are, I'm sure, Bristol, and sort of, you know, Pat Lamb is creating a very good culture there in terms of, you know, they're very big on family and love and all that stuff, and you know, it appears to be working very nicely.
As are we on the ruck.
I think it reflects really well.
Everyone
out there, there were very strong pulls taking back to the NRL, and Pat Lamb worked with him for 1 week before the Barbarians before Radradra demolished England at Twickenham for the Barbarians, and that relationship over the course of that week was critical. And and actually, going rewinding to an early conversation, Pat Lamb would be brilliant on the England coaching setup. And not that I ever think he'll leave Bristol for a job with Eddie, but I think he'd be really good.
Well, it goes back to, you know, look, Eddie is the England coach, so we're not speculating about his job in any way whatsoever.
No,
and I'm gonna make that very clear, and it looks very clear to our guru and everyone else that that, you know, contract's going to be extended for another 2 years. But the simple matter is that I can't remember the last time there was a real process that was run to find the next England coach. And if there is a process, surely what you do is you advertise the post, don't you? And you invite all the applicants, including the current incumbent, and you say, please present your vision for English rugby over the next, you know, 3, 4, 5, whatever amount of years.
Well,
it
there
is
a book to be written on the number of ways that England have gone about.
And if you did that, you know, you'd flesh out the ones, as Alex has pointed out, that actually want to coach international rugby and the ones that don't, because you know, there'll be a mass of CVs from abroad. I can tell you that now. But really, when you look at the Saracens coaching setup and you look at the Exeter coaching setup, you know, there's no reason, and now the Bristol coaching setup, and who knows, maybe even the Northampton Saints coaching setup. You know, without wishing to pull them away from their projects, there's an argument that suggests that any one of those could. Should Eddie Jones not, you know, wish to take the you know, England forward, that would present very well. The key question is, who do they present to, and who makes the final appointment?
On
the Radradra, you said Rob Howley.
Well, I just think if we look at the Premiership signings, I mean, how do you?
Well, say most exciting.
Well, most exciting, yeah. But also most successful. How do you? I mean,
well, they're two very different things. I think Rob Howley ticks both those boxes.
Yeah.
you know, when we're going, who is the best foreign players in the Premiership? You go Shout Brits, you go Nick Evans, and those were the players when they came.
Yeah,
there wasn't such a drum roll.
Yeah, they've been brilliant. Brits has been superb.
But this is Radrandra coming, and the drums. I don't think the drums have ever really been louder. You know.
Yeah. No, well, I think we were discussing when I mean the hype around Sam Burgess was enormous.
Yes,
and it failed.
Yeah. Well, I think
Jason Robinson was my proposal because that was the hype around the excitement around him switching codes was enormous, and he then delivered magnificently.
And also, you know, no disrespect, but Charles Peartow. I mean, Charles Peartow, what he delivered in his first two seasons for Wasps was sensational. He then went to Ulster and was their player of the year. He then came to Bristol, and he's maybe not lit the touch paper quite as much as he did in his first two seasons.
He was injured for most of last season.
But certainly, there's a real excitement and a wow factor when the ball went up in the air and he caught it. You thought that something's going to happen.
Can I bring the subject around to Christmas? Because it's now the 2nd of December. And anyway, I was very excited about my post-match interview with Ollie Thorley yesterday. We discussed some serious matters. This is Ollie Thorley, the Gloucester wing, was spoke to after the Harlequins game, which Gloucester lost narrowly. Should have won, Lawrence. We both agreed on that. And so this is what he had to say.
First of December today.
Yeah.
We can talk about Christmas.
It's official. It's officially begun, hasn't it?
Okay,
yeah.
So we can talk about Christmas. So your favourite Christmas carol?
As I think we discussed sort of the end of last season, wasn't it? I'm a big In the Bleak with Winter fan, but it's got to be the Holst version. It's got to be the Gustav Holst version. Obviously being from Gloucestershire as well, like, you know, we've got to support our local musicians. And
so you're sticking to that? You're sticking to that opinion?
100%, yeah. And as I was just saying before we started speaking, there's a new version that's just come out from the Northern folk singer Kate Rusby.
Really?
Which is very good, yeah. I think you need to get that listen.
And are you doing that on the piano? Have you worked out that at home?
I can do a very, very basic rendition, yeah. Very basic rendition.
Okay, we should get you on the podcast playing it next time then.
Maybe. Let's make it happen.
But have you listened to the Harold Dark version?
I have, but you know, it's not in the same league.
You don't think it's in the same league?
It's not in the same league.
Man.
No, it's not.
Okay, right. just for our listeners, I mean, I think that's significantly superior.
I don't. You know that when it comes to carols, I always think it's the one that gets the people going that you know, you've got to support, and it's the Holst that gets people going. So,
is there much carol singing in the Gloucester Club at the moment?
At the moment, on the back of the last couple of performances, not, but over the Christmas period, we're going to try and convert it such that there's going to be lots of carol singing. So,
what do you think is Danny Cipriani's favourite carol?
Heart the Herald Angels Sing, I may go for. I reckon he likes that, yeah.
Lawrence, you had a singing career, didn't you?
Briefly, yes.
For those who don't know, just fill in the gap.
No, I did. I was a chorister at King's House School, and may have had a number one hit with Tina Turner, may have sung in Evita on the West End stage, but I don't like to talk about it very much.
But you are on the backing track of Tina Turner, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm on the backing track along with 12 other young choristers, but I think the reason it got to number one was probably down to Tina Turner, don't you?
That's unusual modesty for you, Lauren.
but just so we're clear, the track was entitled We Don't Need Another Hero, and it was the theme tune to Mad Max 3. And yes, I still receive royalties from that, which if the revenue are listening, do go straight to charity.
How much do you get a year in royalties or something like that?
We wouldn't be over the salary cap, put it that way. But no, I do enjoy a good Christmas carol, and just for the record, mine is Once in Royal David City is my favourite Christmas carol. There we go.
Alex, I heard karaoke singing in Tokyo, and he won't be bringing out a single, but you're welcome to share with us your favourite Christmas carol.
Oh, gosh, We Three Kings, off the top of my head.
Right, I was going to make a joke about the South African Pro 14 team, but I didn't really... Right. He's not here, but as Lawrence says, we can't leave him alone, or he won't leave us alone. So this is Steve Jones from where is he piped this in from? Normally from Datchet train station, where he normally gets stuck. I don't think it was this time. So this is the almost traditional Jones moans. Over to you, Jonesy, who we are missing.
And here are my moans for this week. Number one is obvious. Many people have just come back from Japan and experienced the sensational transport system with frequent trains, always on time. And the whole thing topped off by the mighty Shinkansen, the bullet train. On Saturday, it was almost impossible to get to Northampton and back. I will not hear a word against the cause of the horrendous delays and logjams, namely the RMT Union. In fact, if I had all their names and addresses individually, I would send them all Christmas gift vouchers for their magnificent contribution to make England feel as if it was back in the era of the horse and cart. Second this week, an attack on world rugby. At the World Cup, they gave us all shoulder bags. They were nice enough, but every single one was of exactly the same colour, with exactly the same markings, and completely indistinguishable from each other. This had the horrible effect. First, when I arrived back at my local station, I couldn't drive my car because the keys were in my bag in the house of the Telegraph's Gavin Mayers, well over an hour away. Gavin couldn't work at his Sunday game for the Telegraph. Yep, apparently the Telegraph was still going because Gav's laptop was in my room in his bag. Why, oh why, World Rugby, could we not have a different colour from the kaleidoscope for each bag? And the third, over the weekend, I saw the replacements bench described in three different ways. I saw them described as finishers, I saw them described as game changers, and I saw them described as squad members. Coaches, for God's sake, you've dropped them all. They've not made the starting team. And remember, whenever you send on eight subs, they change the game, all right. It becomes far worse than it was before.
Brilliant, Jonesy. Thanks for that. Replacements, substitutes, finishers. We're all first pick in this room, so it's kind of irrelevant to us, isn't it?
Indeed.
Right, we'll wrap up with the traditional God or Goddess of the Week. Lawrence?
I think the young Mr. Grayson, who came in at the very last minute to play and replace Dan Bigger, and chip off the old block. He was nothing short of sensational. He's probably the godson of the week, isn't he? I don't know what you can. He's so young, but he's so good, and he's a name to watch. So, young James Grayson is my God of the Week.
I was going to pick him too. So, for variety, I'll pick Harry Thacker, who I just really, really enjoyed watching for Bristol yesterday.
Do you think James Grayson is Matt Dawson's godson?
I think he is. Yeah, I think he is.
Oh, well done him.
Well, if he is, I want to find out what Dawson gives him as a present, because...
don't think it's much?
Well, no, I think he does. I think he probably does look after... Okay. Of all his godchildren, I think he probably does look after Grayson. Otherwise, he's going to get it in the
neck.
That's
a Christmas theme. Just remind Dawson. It's time to deliver. Mine is Debs McCormack, the Scottish lock. Out injured for 14 months, made a comeback at the weekend and returned for an 18-0 victory for Harlequins over Waterloo.
Fantastic.
There we are. Thank you, boys. Great to see you. We're back again next week. Thank you, everyone out there who listens and downloads. Back same time next week with Steve Jones and, I think, Stuart Barnes. And who else? I don't know. Too excited to say. This was The Ruck. Thanks for listening.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.